Hi, Bill DeYoung here. Welcome to the Catalyst Sessions once again. I am so pleased to introduce you to Judith Lisi, who is the CEO and president of the David A. Stress Center in Tampa, Florida. Good morning, good afternoon. It's morning, but people will see this evening. Hi, Judy.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me.
It's good to see you today. Your backdrop is very, very special.
It's a beautiful, beautiful theater, and through the magic of virtual technology, I'm sitting right in the middle of it.
Yeah, it was 92, 93 when you came to Tampa?
92, yeah. It'll be 28 years in September, actually August.
And it was the Tampa Bay Performing Arts Center then.
That's right. It was the Tampa Bay Performing Arts Center, which opened in 1987.
Yeah.
And it was pretty remarkable for its day. It still is the largest performing arts center south of the Kennedy Center. And since then, we've added the conservatory and another theater. And we have wonderful resident companies like Upper Tampa and the Florida Orchestra, Job Site. So it's been great. We have five theaters. We just opened last year our Riverwalk Stage, which is an outdoor venue. Mm-hmm. And we were hoping to open that a couple of weeks ago, but then with the closures of the bars, because we have a bar out there, and with the spike, we thought, let's just play it safe. So hopefully we'll get that open by the end of the summer.
Fantastic. So as I understand it, you know, I'm a St. Pete native, and when I was raising my kids in anyway, long story. I was in and out visiting grandparents. We were in Gainesville those days. But I would come there to see shows occasionally in that period after it opened. But I understand that it was running at a deficit when you came. That it was.
Oh yeah, it was.
So what did you do to turn it around? That's what I want to know.
Well, you know, I have to say it wasn't that hard. They did such an amazing job on this performing arts center. It's almost like it almost didn't even belong in Tampa. It was, you know, it was such a huge world-class performing arts center. And when I was running the Schubert Performing Arts Center, which I was there before I came here, I was recruited to come here. Uh-huh. It was on the cover of every national and international journal. Like, and we would all ask, where's Tampa? Where's Tampa Bay? We didn't even know what the name of Tampa was. It really wasn't on the cultural landscape.
Where were you in those days? You were.
I was in New Haven at that time.
New Haven, yeah, that's right.
Okay. Yeah, and the Schubert was a very famous old theater. They called it the birthplace of the nation's greatest hits. And that went through a huge rebuild and restoration in the 70s. I was there from 83. To 92 before I came here.
So at any rate, you come to Tampa.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah.
So when the recruiter called me, this executive search firm, I had heard so much about this place. I just wanted to see it. So I said, "Wow!" I said, "We've heard so much about this performing arts center," solicited like this before, I would always pay my own way. I don't like when they, you know, when a search firm flies you and they dine you, and that makes me nervous, you know. So I just rather pay my own. I said, I'll come down, I'll just take a look at it. But I don't want to be considered a candidate. I just want to say hello to the folks, things like that. So I did, and I just met the most wonderful people. This board that had worked so hard to build this place. Mm-hmm. I just love the whole Tampa Bay area. I could see that there was so much there that you could see it was really going to become an important place. So I talked to my husband and I said, let's go for it. And so we did, and we loved it. I mean, we just love the entire community, both sides of the bay. I just think it's a remarkable place that we live in.
Well, what was there? Was it just what became more Sunny Hall? You know, you said the conservatory wasn't there yet. What existed when you came here?
There were the three halls were Morsani Hall, which is where I'm supposedly sitting in.
Right.
Ferguson Hall, which is next door. It's a 1,000-seat theater. Morsani is 2,600.
Yes.
I added seats when I came here. So originally it was only $2,400 and I kept putting in seats because seats are money, you know, so I put in more seats. And then I got the Ferguson that was at $900. We got that up to 1,000 seats. Mm-hmm. And then we had the Jay Theater, which is a terrific theater where I started a really great program for cabaret shows there.
That's a and, couple hundred, right, the Jay?
That's 300.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And then we added the Schimberg Theater. Mm. Originally, we called it the Way, 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 Way Off Broadway Theater. And I don't know if you know Wendy Lee, but she's a wonderful person in our theater community here. I gave that to her to play with and develop, and she did a great job. And then JobSite came, and we said, you do your stuff here. And we've had a wonderful relationship with JobSite. And it was important for smaller companies like that to keep their overhead low, because all the other houses are union houses. Mm-hmm. So I was able to keep that overhead low for them. And that really made all the difference for our local groups. And then, so we added that theater. That gave us 4 theaters. And then when we built the conservatory, we built Tico Hall. That is really for, that was built and designed to train people in theater. And so we've got catwalks that have railings on them so kids don't fall off, and expanded light booths and sound booths. Mm-hmm. And all together in the conservatory, we have 22 studios that are really state of the art. That came on board in 2004. So we've been growing. So now we have and then last year we opened the Riverwalk stage. So now we actually have 6 venues.
So just to go back to the question though, that's how you turned it around. It's like, we got to expand. And was it marketing? Was it bringing in better shows? Yeah. The Broadway series?
You hit both of them, Bill. You see, you could have done this yourself, because that's exactly what
I could have done this myself. Right? I mean, was it also, was the Broadway series already in place then? Because that
was their
calling card for you.
Yeah, the thing was, it's not, nobody did anything wrong when they started it. They just didn't know how it could be. That's really what it was. So Broadway's my background. Opera's my background. That's my field. And when I saw the Broadway that they were doing, it was the second, third bus and trucks. It wasn't the big national tours. And when you look at a theater like this, you've got to do something great here. You can't do, I always say, you know, you don't want to go into a fine dining restaurant and have a hot dog. You know, you have to present your meet the expectation, right, the promise of the place.
So instead of Gigi and the Music Man, it's let's get Dear Evan Hansen and the Hamiltons.
Exactly. Because I'm very active in Broadway, I know all the producers, I said I need to get the best shows. And so we developed probably one of the best Broadway series in the country now.
Did Tampa respond to that immediately?
Oh yeah!
I mean, now it's totally a huge thing. But I wonder, in those days, was it sort of like, yes?
Everybody knows quality. They really do. And now they know more now even than they knew then, because of social media. You know. But they knew what was good and what wasn't. And there were always people who follow Broadway, you know, in every community, and they got it. They knew what I was doing right away. So, honestly, once we did that, the other thing was marketing. The marketing materials, it looked too corporate. You know, it didn't look like fun. And that's what we are. As a matter of fact, now you know all the lights we have all over the building. Yeah. It was just concrete. There were no lights on the building at all. There was no signage on the building at all. So like I said, it didn't take really, and the marketing materials were just drab and colorless. And so it's not that they did anything wrong. They just didn't bring the excitement to it and the quality that it demanded. And then education programs, I infused it with education programs because we're committed to that. And then we started our opera company, because I love opera, and I had an opera company in New Haven. So, and I brought down Meister Coppola from New York, and he was my sidekick all these years, and he did a fabulous job. And our opera company just celebrated its 25th anniversary. So
yes, I know. I certainly want to talk about that. I am very familiar with St. Petersburg Opera Company. They're friends of mine. And You know, so we have a lot of people in common there. One more thing about, well, maybe two more things about the venue itself. Historically, just for the people who remember such things, I want to cover this. This is a big part of what I write about. Isn't that where the old Curtis Sexton Hall was in ancient times?
No. Actually, but you're close.
Well, and it was around there someplace.
Curtis Hickson was where the park is now. You know, the park next door to the museum?
Yeah.
That's where Curtis Hickson
was. Oh, okay. I was a kid coming over from St. Petersburg. And
right. But you're close. It was just next door. You know, it's not like it was that far. So, this, from what I understand, was a parking lot where we were. It has a parking lot that had one time been a sawmill on the Hillsborough River. That's what this place was built.
There you have it, folks. There's the history. tell me when Mr. Straz arrived on the scene and that part of it changed.
Well, he was just wonderful. I first met David. Actually, I first heard about him when I was in New Haven before I came here. Mm-hmm. A colleague who was in Milwaukee, I heard I was going to Tampa, and we're a very small group. And this colleague ran the Florentine Opera in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And he said, Judy, he said, are you going to start an opera company when you get there? I said, well, not right away. I've got this $4 million deficit I got to figure out. I said, but after that, I'll see what they're doing in opera there. I didn't know, you know, if there were any small companies or whatever. At any rate, he said, there's somebody that I want to introduce to you that recently moved there. He moved in, David moved to Tampa in 1991, and I came in 92. So he put the two of us together. And so that's how long I've known David.
Wow.
And David was a huge fan of opera. He was on the Metropolitan Opera board for many, many years. And he was very happy to hear when I did decide finally to kind of take some small opera companies and kind of merge them and really make a professional company, which we really needed to do.
Yeah.
So that's how long I knew David. And then eventually the whole notion of his major gift and then the renaming the building came to fruition.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's talk about the opera company, which opera has become near and dear to my heart only in the last few years. And you were a singer, as I understand it.
Yeah.
Were you a soprano? And you were an opera?
Yeah, I was what you call a lyric soprano, like almost, you know, most women are that, except if you're a mezzo, which is that lower range. Mm-hmm. I did both musical theater and opera when I was a performer.
Sure.
But I went to Juilliard, and I just love opera. I love Broadway and opera. To me, they're just an extension of each other. Mm-hmm. You know, what opera has bigger orchestras, bigger choruses, you know, Broadway musicals are more current, and they use electronic sound, and, you know, they come in many different forms. But to me, Broadway and opera are kind of
the musical theater. One of the things I discovered is that when I spoke to so many opera singers in my role as a journalist, and when I was working with St. Petersburg Opera as a publicist, is that they are interconnected. That I knew Deborah Voigt for a while down when I lived around Vero Beach, and she had started in musical theater. They're very connected. And especially these young people today, they do both all the time.
You're exactly right, Bill. Yeah. We have many of our performers do both. Deborah's one who started, as you said. As a mm-hmm. matter of fact, she got our Coppola Award last year. We never got to give it to her because we had to cancel our mm-hmm. 25th anniversary gala. So that's been great. And now we teach opera in the conservatory, and it's just been a dream come true.
When you started Opera Tampa, what was there here?
Well, there were a few small fledgling companies. The problem with opera is it's a very demanding art form. And you either take it and decide you're going to do it the way you need to do it, You can't shortcut opera. You can, but you don't come. You don't get the outcome that you don't get.
The thing at the end of the rainbow.
Right. It's the thing. You know, you got to get the thing. So we had a couple of companies that were really trying. You know, and people in opera, they're passionate about it, but it takes a lot more than passion. And so I talked to a lot of our agents in New York, and they said, oh, we don't even send people there anymore because they didn't pay the bills. You know, they didn't pay the fees for the singers. So opera was getting a bad name here in Tampa.
Wow.
And they were performing it at my center. I said, this is not a good thing. So I went to one of the ones that were performing, and they owed us a ton of money. I said, look, why don't we do this? Since I've had opera companies before, why don't you, and this was Cynthia Yukon. I don't know if you knew Cynthia, but she was a wonderful person. I said, Cynthia, why don't you take over the chorus? Because the chorus is local. And you know, for every opera company, you need a really good orchestra, a really good chorus, and then you could bring in the principals. Yeah. What I had was this fabulous theater. And so I put all my resources into getting beautiful sets and beautiful costumes, which you have to have in opera, you know, you just do. So once I solved the $4 million deficit problem,
right?
I went to the board. This was like 1994, I think. I said, look, we have no debt. We have surplus here. We really need, for any major performing arts center, you need the three traditional art forms of the orchestra, dance, and opera. We don't have opera. I said, we don't have it at the level it needs to be at. I would like to start an opera company. So they said, Judy, you solved the debt. You can do anything you want. I said, okay.
That's sweet. Okay.
they were so sweet. Yeah. I said, but it would be the right thing to do. So the first couple of years we did it with the Florida Orchestra, and they loved it because they needed the work, because Mr. Sram, they were very fledgling at that time. They were having some very, very difficult times. And then so Cynthia developed the opera chorus, and she really did a great job. So I called my buddy, Anton. I said, will you come down? I said, will you be our artistic director? He was a dear, dear friend. He just died a few months ago.
Yes, I know.
Yeah. He said, Judy, he said, absolutely. And so we did it. And
I think a Maestro Coppola, whom I never saw, I'm sad to say, kind of going, Florida, what's in Florida? What? You know, that's like, why would I go there? But he did it for you.
Well, we had so much fun in New Haven because he was my artistic director there. And, you know, and I've known Maestro for a gazillion years. And he taught at Yale, too. What I did in New Haven, I produced three operas at the Schubert. And then we did one with the Yale, the Master School of Music. So I had a four opera series, and he taught there as well. So it worked out great. And so he came down, and we just picked up where we left off. That was the great thing. And it just worked out great.
Was 25 years, my goodness. Was it successful right out of the gate? I mean, I can imagine that building an audience more or less from scratch anyway, even an area that's as sort of sophisticated as this can be, that would have been risky business. I mean, did it take a while?
Well, Bill, when I look back on it now, you know, you kind of have to have your head examined if you think about starting an opera company today. You really do.
Maestro Sforzini you said that.
I accept my fate, but I think the first couple of years I only did one a year because I really wanted to put all our resources and make them spectacular, so that when people came, they would be blown away and not disappointed. And I really believe less is more. And so many times, if you do something, do it well. Because if you try to do it on the cheap, you're not going to. People know that. They won't know how. They'll just know it. You know.
Yeah.
So we did.
And
they will recognize it. You know, your audiences are your truest critics. They know. So the other thing I did was I picked operas. We were doing Miss Saigon, the original Miss Saigon, which was a huge, huge touring production.
Right.
So I thought this would be a good time to introduce opera by doing Madame Butterfly, because I could link the two from a marketing perspective.
Sure.
So Miss Saigon.
You're thinking
was so,
that way. I can see that. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because just what you said, we had to introduce opera.
Yeah.
So I said, our campaign was, if you see Miss Saigon, see where it all started. Come and see Miss Madame Butterfly. And of course, Madame Butterfly is everybody's favorite opera anyway. It's so beautiful. And and so I think I think the audience has really got it. And I had people telling me that never seen opera come to me. One woman came in tears. All my life, I've wanted to see Madame Butterfly. I never thought I'd have the ability to see it. And you hear things like that, you know, and it makes it all worthwhile. And then we have a big program in the schools where we take our operas out and we tell them what to expect, what they're going to see. And they sing the different arias and tell them what the song is about, mm-hmm. and how it fits into the whole show. So when the students come in, we have hundreds of kids come in for our dress rehearsals. Yes. We have two dress rehearsals, and they love it. You know, opera is just, it's just music. It's just a musical on steroids. That's what I always say. It's just bigger.
There is, as we've discussed quite a bit in the Catalyst when I've written about opera, there's still a stigma attached to it where people sort of go, oh, opera, that's a little snooty for me. Or they sing in Italian. Yeah. I know you have super titles and all that, but, ooh, I don't understand it.
I would say to people, they say, somebody say to me, are you going to come to the opera? This was when I was first doing it. They said, well, no, opera's not for me. I don't care for opera. I said, oh, okay. I said, well, what operas have you seen? Maybe it wasn't, you know.
They've seen Bugs Bunny doing Wagner, right?
Yeah. No, they said, I haven't seen any operas. I just don't like it.
Yeah.
I said, I'll tell you what. Come as my guest. Just come as my guest. If you like it, then you'll come again. If you don't like it, you never come again. I cannot tell you that person, not only did he become an opera goer, he became one of my biggest donors. So it's just what people don't know, you know, and we try to be iconoclasts and break down that kind of, what you said, snooty. It's just people don't know. I've been going to opera since I was a kid, so it never occurred to me that opera was snooty.
Right.
Yeah, it just occurred to me that it was part of my life. I didn't know that it, yeah, that perception, but we have to break through it. That's why our program is so important in the school. So kids come and they hoot and they howl. But I'll never forget with Pinkerton, he came on for his curtain call and they booed him because they didn't like what he had done to Madame Butterfly, you know? So they get the stories, they're smart.
Pinkerton is a, you know, he gets booed wherever he goes.
Yeah, yeah.
So Tyler Putnam and his wife Sarah Norton were on here, and Tyler, of course, was going to be the Pirate King when you were doing Penzance. Is your plan now? And you had, my God, Aida is huge, right? Let's talk about. I don't know how to even say this. Blah 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 blah. Your plans. I mean, can you make plans? What's maybe in the future?
Well, it's a great question, Bill. What we decided to do, you know, we closed on the opening night.
I know.
Of Pirates of Penzance.
Friday, March 13th. Never forget it. Yeah.
Friday, March 13th.
Yeah.
And it was heartbreaking, but we had to because we were also opening Jersey Boys, and we had heard that somebody had come down with COVID as that was part of the Jersey Boys company. And, you know, everything happened that week. I don't know if you remember, that was the crazy week where all of a sudden everything closed.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we just said we have to because we don't know how bad this thing is. So it was heartbreaking because they had, you know, how opera people are. They put their heart and soul into the production.
Yeah.
And to not be able to do it. So when we were looking at, we had different plans for next year, but we thought, you know what, why don't we do this? since we have Pirates of Penzance, we commissioned a brand new, beautiful set. Everything was done. And so we said to the performers, would you be willing to come back next year and do the show in 2-1? They all said, absolutely.
So we're gonna, the set's still there on the stage right now?
Yeah. No. It's in storage now.
Oh, okay.
But it is. We own the set. So
David Jenkins at Jobsite said that the set for Doubt was still there up in the Schomburg.
Yes, it is.
The dark and cold for 3 months.
Well, but it didn't make any sense to take that set down. We had to because we're using the Ferguson stage for our camps this summer, so we did have to take that down. But it's in storage, and so we'll just put it back up. We already have the investment in everything, and so we'll start our series next year with Pirates of Penzance.
In 21, I mean, do you have a...
In 21.
Can you have a day, say, January?
Well, you know, Bill, as I always say, we're planners. We're planning as if we can. It's still a good 8 months out. You know, we don't start till next February. Yeah. So the director is going to maybe position people, the singers, differently. We're all looking, I can't tell you how many national task forces I'm on. Yeah. About how singers are going to be able to sing safely on stage, how we're going to help protect our musicians in the orchestra pit, if we're going to have them somewhere else. Kind of, if you have, buy stock in plexiglass, because everybody's buying plexiglass for everything. They even talked about putting little bubbles around each musician in the orchestra. I mean, it's just crazy. But our plan is, yes, we'll go forward. And if we can't go forward, we'll just pick it up and move it and advance it to when we can. That's the best we can do. But I don't want to just sit and not plan. You know, I want to have a program, and if we can't do it, we'll just move it. For example, our Broadway series, we have the most amazing Broadway series next year. And all of the shows that were supposed to open in the fall, which included shows like To Kill a Mockingbird, one of the biggest shows on Broadway, right? Oh, they're all big hits. Hadestown that won the Tony, you know, in 19. All these huge shows, they're not going out in the fall. So what I was able to work out with the producers is reroute them so that they could be in the fall the following year. So we'll still be able to have a contiguous series. So I'll start in January with Wicked, and then we'll go all the way through. We have Hamilton next year too, to the following fall. So our series will be from a January to a December rather than from October to then. So, but that's all we can do. We can't get down about it. We just got to figure out, you know, how we keep it all moving forward.
Stay pragmatic, move forward as best you can.
Absolutely.
One last question as we circle the end of our time here. Did I read somewhere that you were thinking it might be retirement time for you one of these days?
It's been retirement time for me for about the last 5 years, my dear.
So, well, I did read it somewhere.
No, it's actually overtime for me. Wow. But I feel I have to at least get us through this bump that we're in right now.
Sure.
But it's a great place, and I think we have a wonderful future. It's a great community, so it's all there. And we have a big master plan that we're working on. So I won't be there to finish it, but at least I want to make sure it gets restarted.
Well, Judy Lisi, Tampa Bay Area is happy to have you for all
Thank you, Bill.
It's time for me to say goodbye, but thanks so much for being here today.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed every minute of it.
And we wish you continued success, and I'll see you at Wicked in January, if not soon.
There you go.
Okay. Take care now.
Thank you.
Bye.